we are at Tobacco on Main Street. Hi, Tom.
Welcome to Tobacco on Main Street. We're glad you're here. Come on in.
Why don't you show us around?
I'd be happy to. We're in a unique space. I even like to call it quirky now and then, but it works. Welcome to our store area. This is kind of where we hold forth on the pipes and unique gift aspect of what we do. Also have, nice refreshments available. If you need a little nosh, got to be jerky, chips, chocolate, things like that. But you will not find ordinary items that you can on Amazon here. I am anti-Amazon. If you look around, there are many, many unique pieces. This humidor here is a 100-year-old box that we then converted into a humidor. It's going to be a prize for one of my founders members at our founders feast. We just like to do things different. So, come on up. Let's go look at the cigar room. We have a small but well-appointed humidor room, roughly about 300 different cigars. A little something for everybody. We have a cabinet that is infused, or aromatic, as they sometimes prefer to be called. You kind of carry three cabinets of your regular choices, but not stuff you'd find necessarily in every cigar shop you walk into. And then we have our unusual cabinet, which is right now featuring Christoph, great brand that's underrated, undervalued, underrepresented in the Maryland area. And then we are also the Lancero capital of the world. Actually, always sporting between 20 to 30 Lanceros. If you've not tried a Lancero, you're missing out. I'll get you a little better view straight on in. It is, in my humble opinion, one of the three best shapes of cigars ever. If you've not tried one, I recommend it. A nice little selection for everybody, one way or the other. We've got you covered palette-wise. We also have our lockers for our founding members, which they make great use of. We're always changing it up, keeping it different. We try to bring in new brands all the time, different shapes, different sizes. One of the things we do is out of print cigars. Great example. Drew Estate's Kentucky Fire Cured Swamp Things. Been out of print for 3 years, and those are actually original runs from 2016. So it's stuff you can't get just anywhere, is kind of what we do. Let's head on over to the lounge. Appointed bathroom too, by the way, of course, for everybody's comfort. Always very clean. And welcome to the Phoenix Room. This is kind of our traditional aspect, ode to cigar lounge, with the very comfy leather chairs, really big TV, low lighting, very well ventilated. Unique building. The building was built in 1850, so there's some unique architectural aspects to the space. And again, a TV that my wife says is too freaking big. Said, yes, honey, you understand it. Come on this way. We kind of have three separate lounge zones. This one is where I call my picture window. And while we are on Main Street, we technically aren't on Main Street. We're at the back of Main Street, but we have one of the best views in downtown Westminster. Also, plenty of free parking right out back.
That's a good-looking pickup truck.
It is indeed. A good buddy of mine just got that. Well-equipped ice maker, Keurig, any kind of glasses you need, a small kitchenette if we need more help and effort. And then we also are down to our, what I call the side room. This is a place where conversation, quiet work, study, all manner of things happen. Sometimes a party does break out down here, you never know. But it is a very fun, very well-ventilated space. Clean all the time, and when you walk out of our cigar lounge, I also have Febreze waiting for you, because nobody wants to smell like they just came out of a cigar lounge. So this is all designed for the comfort and enjoyment of our guests. That's the end of the tour. Thanks for showing us.
Thank you, Tom.
Soon.
Burn Line Podcast. The burn line on a well-crafted cigar is straight and sharp as a razor, much like our wit and wisdom. And what is up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, over the age of 21. You're listening to Burn Line Podcast, coming to you not live from the hot box, the smoky back room where deals are struck and fortunes are made, adjacent to the Phoenix Room, nestled amongst a complex of rooms that comprise tobacco on Main Street. And we have got a special episode for you today. I'm Johnny Midas.
And I'm Alfumo.
I'm Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
And today we're talking about So You Wanna Open a Cigar Lounge. Man, that's like everybody's dream.
Yeah.
At least in our circle or whatever. I'd say roughly half, at least, of my acquaintances that smoke cigars have some kind of dream of opening their own lounge. Right? It just is cool, right? And, well, guess what? We got the cool cat with us today. Mr. Tom Cannon is going to be sharing with us the story of Tobacco on Main Street, his journey to get here, and, you know, some things to look out for, some things to try, some things to avoid, all of that. So we are going to get down and dirty about starting a cigar lounge. So thank you for joining both of you guys today. And, Tom, you got us some real goodies here.
Ooh, yeah.
Why don't we start with the alcohol?
All right, so tonight we are going to be enjoying Covalent Spirits Spiced Old Fashioned Orange Old Fashioned. It even comes with, you know, the orange slices that you get it. It is currently available. It is a seasonal release. This is from last year's batch, but it is available at Covalent right now. But you got to check their website to see how long it is available. But it is ready to go, drinkable straight out of the bottle. And it is fantastic.
And that's CovalentSpirits.com. And they're right across the street.
So yeah, if you want to support. A great neighbor to have.
Yeah. So support locals. Yeah.
They know how to host the party, by the way.
Yeah. And it does come with these spiced orange slices.
That's
sealed
cool
up.
Shit.
They're sealed in a thing so you can take them with you.
I was going to say, I've never seen that.
All right. Shall we taste test?
Oh, yeah.
Sláinte.
Salud.
Here's to us. Perfect for the autumn air.
That is really fucking good.
Whoa, that is the, by the way, this, not trying to kiss ass, that is the best old fashioned I've ever tasted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so what I was saying earlier, didn't finish my thought, was, you know, I'm not a mixed drinks guy, but I actually go out of my way to go to Covalent because they actually know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not
they,
like
they do. I'm with you 100%. I am 1,000% not a cocktail guy.
Not a cocktail guy.
Love their cocktails,
but go there. Yeah,
she has a degree in chemical engineering from MIT. She knows what it's going to taste
right.
like before she makes it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're unique, like what would you call it? A twist on something that's absolutely phenomenal. So,
and doesn't feel like a bar.
Doesn't feel like a bar. Mm-hmm. No. Super high class, and what I actually, one of the things that I love about the design over there is fucking everybody for the last 15 years has been designing their drinking room like a Rick House, you know, and they said, no, we're going to go with like the Chesapeake Bay look, and it's beautiful and comfortable and inviting and different, a little bit of a breath of fresh air from the
and a very flexible
overdone
space.
Yeah, and flexible.
Depending on what they're doing.
Yeah. But this is a good example, I think, of what they can do, which is produce a phenomenal cocktail that's a little unique and different. Yeah, I mean, I drink whiskey. I drink bourbon. Maybe some rocks. But I'll go there for a mixed drink on purpose.
Yes, indeed. One of my favorites over there is the Power of Hydrogen, which the top half of it's purple, the bottom half of it's yellow. It tastes like lemonade. Doesn't matter what's in it. It's dangerous, but it's good.
Yeah, the smoked lavender old-fashioned is amazing. And the painkiller, like their painkiller with the freshly grated ginger or whatever.
And they'll do a series during the weeks up to Christmas, each week a new Christmas drink will come out.
Yeah.
And those are a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. All right. So that's what we're drinking and smoking. So first of all, Tom, why don't we introduce our individual sticks, and then you can tell us about why we're smoking what we're smoking.
So one of the things I like to do is smoke aged cigars. Premium tobacco is similar to fine wine or fine spirits. The more age that's on it, the better it is. It always adds a smoothness that nothing but aging it will do. So one of the things I like to show off here at Tobacco on Main Street is well-aged or out-of-print cigars. We are all smoking Lanceros because we are also the Lancero capital of the world. I'm going to be smoking the Punch Chop Suey, which I think is about 3 or 4 years old. I'm not sure exactly. My brain's getting a little old for that. But, you know, it was a great cigar at a great price point. I know they were like $5 or $6 when they came out. You put that time on it, now it's going to be a $15 cigar. John, you're smoking a My Father from, I think, 2016. And you can, might be able to tell because that Cello's got a lot of yellow on that. Medium plus cigar when it was brand new. So it's still going to be well into that zone, but a lot smoother than a version you may have smoked from that before. El Fumo has the out-of-print Diesel Disciple Lancero. I think that's also in the 3 to 4 year range. Going to add a smoothness that you've not seen before. One of the things I love, and the reason why we are the Lancero capital of the immediate world, is Lanceros are absolutely the best shape in so many ways. For from a scientific standpoint, the shorter and thinner a cigar is, the hotter it burns, and that will change the flavor of the tobacco. Conversely, the longer and fatter a cigar is, the cooler it smokes, it will change the flavor of the tobacco. If you ever sat down and smoked the same cigar in Robusto Toro Churchill, that's kind of the way to see how that works out. The Lancero, being long and thin, sort of gives you the best of both worlds, and it is a statistical fact that this, percentage-wise, has more wrapper leaf on it than a cigar that is fatter. The wrapper leaf is always the leaf that gets the most care, aging, tasting, you know, everything about it, da-da-da-da-da. You are getting a larger percentage of wrapper taste on this cigar. On average, Lanceros, despite the fact that they are a thin, willowy cigar and get accused of, well, that's a lady cigar, they are half a click stronger than their normal size counterparts. A Lancero in your favorite cigar will give you a little more oomph than you're probably used to. But that's part of why it's a fantastic cigar. It still is only going to last, hour and 15, depending on how you're hitting it. So it's an enjoyable size.
All right, so why don't we get these cut and lit? And you did mention Lancero Capital, the Eastern Seaboard, and we saw that in the tour. If you are a cigar snob, there's a good chance that you like the Lancero version of whatever cigar because of that punchy flavor, right? And that's why Sokka produced a whole box of Lanceros.
Another Lancero episode. That was fun.
Yeah, the Lancero episode. The GFY. And he wrote in the inside lid of the box, for some reason, all of you cigar people think you love Lanceros. So I made you a whole box of them. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's fitting that we're all smoking a different Lancero at Tobacco on Main Street, which we're not smoking yet, so I need to shut up. I've got my Craftsman's Bench, open-ended, double guillotine. Angel?
I have an Arturo Fuente.
Open-ended, double guillotine. Tom?
Calibri V-cut.
As usual. And as always, we remind you to clip that cigar with authority. No limp-wristed cutting allowed. And we're just going to tap that ash.
Well, there's plenty coming out.
And this is a little part of the ritual that you can overlook, but when you're on a podcast, you definitely don't want to burn the tip of your tongue. And then also, depending on the tobacco, those little flecks also can create like little pepper bursts on your tongue
mm-hmm.
that interrupt the flavor.
get stuck on your teeth.
Yep. Yep, totally. So, all right. I think it is time for the official lighting brought to you by 2C Premium Coffee. I'm going to light up with my ST DuPont flat flame, double flame butane torch. And Angel?
I'm going to light up with my premium Chinesium.
All right, that's a triple flame.
Triple flame torch.
And I'm going with my war-torn Jetline New York quad. These things, you can beat them all to hell, and they still light.
Still keep on ticking. All right. So three different approaches, two, three, and four jets.
That's funny.
On your marks, get set, go.
I win.
And as always, we remind you, toasted, not roasted. Treat that cigar with love and respect it deserves, and it will return the flavor.
The first puff is always...
This wonderful. Is the original My Father. I don't know if you remember, but they start out with just like one blend. This is the number 4 Lancero. And the original My Father was always probably definitely a top 10 blend, possibly top 5 blend because of its versatility. It's really good. It's not overpowering, but it still has a lot of flavor and punch. So I'm really, really looking forward to smoking this. And I think the... Lancero Vitola is sort of like the perfect cigar lounge smoke. It doesn't smoke for too long. It's delicious. It's got a little bit of bragging rights, you know, a little level of sophistication.
Yeah.
And you can't smoke it outside.
Yeah.
I mean, I have, but it's a struggle to keep it lit because of the cross section so small.
Right.
You know, cold weather, wind.
Especially a day like today, it's cold and windy outside.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd smoke anything outside today, but definitely not a narrow ring gauge.
Mm-hmm. Interesting part of mine is they shortened the wrapper leaf. So for the first 3/4 of an inch there, you're doing binder and filler, and then you'll get a jump up into the wrapper. More of a marketing thing than anything else, but interesting. If you've never experienced it, because it will show you when blindfolded, you'll know when it changed gears.
Yeah, it looks cool for sure, but also... If for anyone out there, if you want to know what the wrapper adds, that's the cigar to smoke, because you literally can taste it when that wrapper kicks in. And you're like, oh,
shit,
now I know, right? Yeah, the first inch or so, like, preps your palate, right?
Mm-hmm. There is always more to learn about premium tobacco. That's why I've, you know, been doing this now for 11-some years. Still learn more. There's always more to learn about refining how you enjoy this lifestyle. Best parts, there's no wrong answer.
Yeah.
Except for Groovy Blues.
So, I think there's a lot more sweetness on this than I remember, and I'm going to chalk that up to the age. Yeah. It's like the classic My Father blend, but
they,
a lot
sweeter.
They are
a solid company. You know, there's not one of their cigars that I'm not happy to sit down and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just smoked the Series JJ, Don Pepin Garcia, 25th anniversary.
Yep. Great smoke.
So tell me about your Diesel Disciple. I posted that on... Insta a couple weeks ago. That was in the pack for Top Shelf, and that was a little midweek treat for me. Posted a shot of it. Kind of really looked good because I took the shot at a downward angle with like my cowboy boot in the picture, and it looks like something that, you know, like at a Fistful of Dollars or something. You know, it does have like a...
Yeah, this size was semi-popularized by Clint Eastwood in his cheap budget movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it has like a Bandito look to it with the black and silver. Like very, very Southwest bad guy sort of style. Yeah. Tell me what you're tasting.
All right. So I'm getting like a chocolatey, earthy, spicy note right off the bat. And it's really, really good.
I guess I didn't give tasting notes on mine, but most of our listeners are probably familiar with the classic My Father, so take that and add like an oak stave dipped in honey, and the leather is more like mellowed out. So like the leather flavor on a fresh My Father is kind of like, I don't know, a fresh pair of leather boots, and this is more like the boots that have been in your closet for 10 years.
Yeah. And it's like the spice, it's not like a cayenne, it's just a very strong spice right at the end of the retrohale. I was like, whoa, it tells you, hey, I'm here. Like, it punches you. It's like, can't forget about me.
And, Tom, tell us about that punch.
Well, yeah, speaking of punch, you know, I'm getting a kind of a lot of kind of wet, dark earth out of it, which is, I wasn't really expecting. I was expecting it to kind of have a, that's more of a stronger taste than you associate with a cigar. Power scale 1 to 10, this is probably a 7 to 8. Where you're still looking for more nut and cedar tones at that level, but I'm very happy with it. Again, I'm just about to get into the wrapper, so it is just about to change gears on me. But it is delightful because I am getting the nut, the cedar, a hint of leather, you know, kind of the traditional medium flavors that are coming out of it. But it is an exciting cigar.
And I think for me, this is a really good pairing. With this spiced orange old-fashioned. I think the sweet and kind of that almost Christmas spice palette.
Yeah, this smells like the fall holidays.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you showed us the view, the amazing view here, and we're looking out at a chilly, spitting rain, you know, dusk.
Yeah,
and sitting here in the sitting here in the warm lounge with our fine cigars and our fine drink, it feels amazing.
It's and a this great is experience. Why everybody wants to open their own cigar lounge.
Yes, and most of us shouldn't probably. So why don't we get into that? Because you know one of the reasons I wanted to put this episode together is. I mean, I've talked about it. Everybody I know has talked about, not everybody I know, but more than other hobbies, right? So, I go to the gym. I don't have a lot of friends that's ever said, I want to open my own gym, right? I'm into cars. I've never met anybody that said, I want to make my own car. Just one guy, actually. But it was a low rider, so that kind of doesn't count. Tim, he did, from scratch. Like the frame, everything. Yeah. But in any case, cigars are totally different. Everybody that falls in love with the hobby, probably I would say a good half of them, have said something like, I'd like to open my own lounge.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas you know you might be into cars, but you don't want to open your own dealership. You know. So I thought we could. Why don't you start with the story of Tobacco on Main Street and how it came together, and then we'll kind of get into some tips and tricks sort of thing.
Well, and I'm going to back up half a step because there is a difference between everybody that wants to open a cigar lounge, which is what they want to do, and opening a cigar store. There is a huge difference. If you just want to open a cigar lounge, get yourself a building in your backyard, a shed, a pole barn, whatever. And build the lounge you want and invite your friends over. It'll cost you a lot and you'll save a lot of money. If you want to open your own store, that's an entirely different matter. It is not for the faint and weak of heart. The lounge part is kind of the fun part aspect of it, hanging out with your guests, your buddies, your pals, meeting new people. There's always great discussions. It is a hoot. There is no doubt. But you got to make it work money-wise, and that's what the store is for. From a strictly technical point of view, the lounge costs you money. It is half your rent, and it generates no income. But you need one. So you got to figure out the store end of it. And if you have a dream of opening your own cigar store, first off, I'm going to say don't. Then I'm going to say, well, if you really want to do it, the first thing you need to do is work 2 years in a cigar store. You need to get a hold of kind of how the traffic flow works, you know, what cigars work.
Okay, but let's pause there for a minute, because I'm going to go back a couple of steps to what you were talking about. So, interesting to me, because I'm a business guy, But you pointed out something important, right? So in business terms, we would say that a cigar lounge is a cost center. It costs you money, and it doesn't have the ability to generate revenue. The cigar shop does. And so the business side, as opposed to hobby, is in order to have a going concern, you have to generate more revenue than expenses. Which, of course, you know, you have your rent, you have your power, you have your internet, right, to power the television or whatever, water bill, all the stuff that is associated with a building. You have salaries if you're paying those. And then, of course, you have stock, which is, you know, that's money. And it's not just upfront cost, but you have to reserve cost of goods sold, our COGS, to restock, because you can't sell from an empty wagon. So if you run out of cigars in your wagon, you go broke, right?
And that is the hardest part. I've you know, been in this industry for over a decade. I've seen 20 to 30 some shops pop up. If they last a year, they were above average. And that is their single hardest part, is keeping enough stock in.
The foundational business philosophy would be you have to earn more than you spend to be a going concern. And it's the cigar shop that does that, not the lounge.
Correct.
So, yeah, for those of you out there that want a kick-ass lounge and have money to burn, just go fucking put up a pole barn in your backyard. Actually, Tom will know a thing or two about that.
Yeah.
I've never done that.
Yeah.
Still doing it.
Yeah. But that's not what a lot of folks mean. Now, I think because sometimes we're confused. Because some guys, what they want is the lounge experience, and they want to be the guy. This is my lounge, right? Well, if you're not interested in running a business, just put it on your property and burn money, right?
Particularly if you want to be your lounge. If you're going to invite the public in, it is their lounge. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference for that. Mm-hmm. I do try my best to make everybody that walks through my door make it feel like, congratulations, you just walked into your living room. How can I help you?
Yeah, the customer service aspect, for sure. So I just wanted to camp on that because I'm a business guy. And, you know, that's an important point. If you're going down this road, you have to earn more than you spend. Just like with your household finances, and everybody except Congress has to do it that way. And so you have to have a business plan to keep the shelves stocked and pay the bills. That's cash flow, right, as well as revenue. If you're paying your suppliers, you know, net 30, and you're getting paid up front, well, that doesn't, unfortunately, that doesn't help with the floor, unconstitutional floor taxes in Maryland.
The cigar industry is largely a show me your money now.
Mm-hmm.
And for good reason.
Right.
Ooh, yeah.
Whereas, contrast that with retailers, Walmart, for example, 80% of their stock is purchased by a customer before their net 30, net 45 terms, net 60 terms with their suppliers. So they're actually getting paid before they have to pay for the stuff they sold. That's great for cash flow. Well, you don't have that in the cigar industry.
Very, very rarely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of companies, if you have a big enough account and you've been doing business long enough, they still have rules where you go on terms, you know, and they'll bill you. But nobody that's starting out is going to have that.
Nope. You will not.
You have to work your way up, which means you have to monitor your cash flow very carefully. So I nerded out on that a little bit.
All good Please stuff, because you were absolutely 1,000% right. I will also say, too frequently you see somebody that starts off building the Taj Mahal of cigar stores and cigar lounges. Don't do it. Keep it small. Make it nice. Keep it comfortable. Da-da-da-da-da. But do not go into debt building this $150,000 lounge. The other too frequent issue regarding cigar lounges is the last money they invest is in ventilation. And that's where you need to put it first. Nobody wants to smell like they just walked out of a cigar lounge that had 300 guys in it.
Yet I noticed we walked past like 3 rabbit airs.
Yes, and we'll be adding more. You know, things cost about $1,000 each, so as we get to them, we will. And you also need to know a that's part of one of the things I recommend about working in a cigar lounge is you need to understand airflow and negative air pressure. It is a math equation about how much fresh air is coming in versus how much bad air is being sent out of the space.
Well, Tom, you're starting to make it sound like work.
Well, it is. You know, everybody thinks it's easy, and you know, admittedly, I will. You know, I'm guilty as to that reason, because when you come and visit me, I'm normally probably going to sit down in the lounge with you, and they think, you know, oh well, Tom's got all day just to sit around, and you know, he brings up a couple cigars. You don't see me working. That's part of what I do. It is technically it is a retail business, but it is disguised because it is a hospitality business. You can get any of the stuff I sell, well, not all of it, but a lot of the stuff online. I'm not here to beat Amazon or whoever on price. I just can't do it. There's not enough money for me to do that. What I can beat them on is service. That's a pretty low bar. Mm-hmm. Amazon wise.
Wait, they won't let you smoke in the Amazon delivery van? What the hell?
Yeah, so, all right, so that's more good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because what we're talking about is, first of all, it can be fun, but it's still work, right? But then also, in regards to what type of business is it, and you mentioned you're in the hospitality industry, that's really important, right? So there has to be sales. It's a retail mm-hmm. Business. If you don't have sales, it's not going to stick around for long. But what you're really competing on is the atmosphere and the experience. And one of the reasons on Burnline that we support the local retailer is they're often, not always, but they're usually connected to a lounge. And the lounge is why I am in cigars. I went to a lounge. I met cool people. I said, man, there's no venue left. There is no venue left in America like a cigar lounge to meet friends instantly, bond over something. Some of them are really cool. Some of them are not really cool, but they're still friends, right? And that's what you're actually, that's your value proposition. If you were a cigar retailer only, you're right. You would be competing with all of the giant online retailers. But the giant online retailers don't have these leather seats that we're sitting in, you know, feeling big, being big, right, and just enjoying life, right?
Yeah, when I come into a lounge, I want to feel like I'm an executive and just got out of
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Everybody gets along in a cigar lounge.
Yeah.
It is one of the last places on earth where that happens. And
yeah.
You will make new friends
yeah.
and acquaintances all the time.
Yep. And, you know, the, I guess the point can't be sort of hammered home enough, which is, that's the competitive edge, is how people feel. Now, that's already what cigars are, right? This is a hobby that is about enjoying a finely crafted product and enjoying yourself. And how you feel after you leave a place is really going to determine whether you go back, right? How you talk about it, ratings online, you know, all of that stuff. I'm supposed to cut this part out.
Yeah.
That was literally a customer coming in while we're closed to see Tom. And guess what Tom's doing?
Being a purveyor.
Making them feel right at home.
Exactly.
As he walks them to the door.
Right.
Right? That's what it takes to run a shop.
Yeah.
Everybody sees his car parked outside, and guess what they think?
Fucking
A. It's open. Yes. But we just got done talking about money, and you have to have cash flow if you're going to stay open. But if you get caught up in that, and forget what you compete on, you're going to sink yourself. Right? There's nothing worse than the, you know, experience of casual dining where you go in and all they want to do is fucking turn the tables.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you're like, this is gross. This
it's
is
not
like
what I came for.
This is like fast food where you can sit down. Right? I was at Olive Garden the other month because my daughter likes the breadsticks, and they're so far down the toilet that they actually have like an iPad on a stand. It's like a mm-hmm. they spent extra money to buy these special fucking electronics. And you're supposed to like pay for your meal there at the table using a touch screen. Like, the most, that is the most out-of-touch corporate decision ever. Who goes to an Olive Garden to get rushed by your server to clear a table so they can turn tables, and then you're paying, like, on an electronic device? Like, that's not...
Green Turtle had the same thing.
Yeah, it's not why you go to a sit-down restaurant.
Yeah, correct? Texas Roadhouse did the same thing. It's like, why?
Green Turtle had.
Had.
Yes.
You know why?
Oh, they're gone.
They're gone. Yeah. Well...
At least in Westminster.
Darden is heading down that road, to be honest. They're a very poorly managed group of franchises, but, you know, it's an example of completely out of touch. How does that make the patron feel in the restaurant? Like a fucking
underappreciated.
Yeah, like a commodity. Your cattle come in, get your fucking spaghetti and meatballs and get out.
Yeah.
We can turn the table. And also, we interact with these screens all day. When you put that right in the middle of your sit-down dining experience, you just kill the entire vibe.
Plus, it runs commercials all the freaking time.
Well, that too. Yeah, and it takes up space on the table. Like, it's completely out of touch. But you can run into the same problem with a cigar lounge that you open if you're not focused on the fact that it's a service industry. How do people feel when they walk through that door and when they walk out of that door? Right? All right, sorry to pontificate. I don't know anything about it. I've never opened a shop. I'm a business guy. I like thinking about these things. So, Tom?
Well, I think that's an important part. And, you know, we talked about, you know, that the cash flow goes to the product. Cigars are a funny thing. It doesn't matter whether the cigar is any good or not. It only matters whether it sells. You need to avoid buying cigars. It could be your favorite cigar. It could be the best cigar on the planet. But if you bought two boxes and they sit there, you're now paying rent on the space and that money. If it doesn't turn, sell it. Mark it down, get rid of it. My personal rule is if this box doesn't flip in 90 days, nice experiment. Bye.
Yeah, mark it down, get it out, put something on the shelf,
yeah,
it turns.
You need your cash back, you need your space back, all of it. It is a turnover business.
Where does, like, point of sale come into that? Now, I noticed you went ahead and invested in a real point-of-sale system.
Yes.
I'm assuming that a big benefit of that is tracking inventory.
It's absolutely the best part of it. You know, I use Lightspeed, did a fair amount of research, and that was the one that suited me best. Part of that is because it works with QuickBooks wonderfully, the whole nine yards. Keeps track of my sales, my inventory. You still need to tweak it now and then, but...
Doesn't QuickBooks automatically reserve archives if you set it up that way?
Yep, it will.
So, for cigar stores that use QuickBooks, there's no excuse to not have money set aside to restock your shelves. And I'm not picking on any cigar store that went out of business and used QuickBooks, but I've seen it happen three times recently.
And really boiled down, that, you know, the easy formula of it is, if, you know, you sold $1,000 worth of cigars, that means you need to take $500 out instantly and go buy more cigars. And if you don't do that, you're not going to be in business long. But the rest of the money that's left over is for the rest of your bills. And it is important to pay yourself. You know, it's You do need to make an income for you and your staff, da-da-da-da-da. Be very careful about staff, you know. I'm very selective. Most of them are family members because it allows me a different set of rules.
Yeah, yeah.
So on and so forth. But the least expense about staff is their payroll.
Yeah. A couple of takeaways for me. You mentioned that having cigars and having ventilation are probably, like, the top two things. Now, we are kind of lucky here because we have this beautiful room that is intentionally modeled after, like, a Cuban villa. So it feels like you're smoking a cigar when you're in here.
Thanks to my wife.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, and that's another point, is you leverage the talent around you instead of leveraging money. Now, this is a business thing. It's not just cigar lounges. I deal with this all the time in my consulting where... Look, it's America. You can pay for everything. Don't.
Yeah.
You know, don't leverage capital. Leverage relationships first, right? So, you ever hear of OPM?
I have not.
Other people's money?
Oh, other people's money, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody knows about OPM.
Use of that as little as possible.
Yeah.
Sometimes you really want to use it.
Yeah, yeah. What about leveraging other people's skills, other people's talents, other people's ideas, other people's passions, other people? There's a lot of stuff other people have, and especially, you know, if you're talking about a cigar shop and a cigar lounge, it's a community project. There's a lot of people that will come along and help you out. And you recently, didn't you recently partner with Kojak on...
I did. Yes, I have two great marketing digital advertisers, both within two blocks of me. They're both locker members. I use one for some stuff. I use another for other stuff. But they want to see me succeed. So they are actively helping me. I also know a guy that makes glass. I've had to use him a couple of times. And he's given me a great price on stuff. But again, that's part of how I advertised the place was to my founding members was you get to help build this place that we are all going to hang out in. You know, I want your input. What do you want? What do you want to see? How's it going to go? You know, I have to prioritize that with my, cash flow and everything like that. But it's been a rare request that I've turned down so far. Some are still in the works.
And you're actually wearing one of those hoodies right now.
I am indeed. Yeah, this is from Kojak Graphics. Tony Cavacci is the owner and a founding member here. So we have a deal. We're selling clothing, only three different pieces, a hoodie, a polo, and a t-shirt. But it's a limited run. He set up an internet store. I only had to buy three pieces off the bat. Thankfully, they're all in my size. Everybody can order exactly the color, the size, whatever they want. When the store closes, the stuff gets made. It's here 2 weeks later. Boom, 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 boom. Everybody gets their stuff. Going to do it 3 to 4 times a year. Change it up. It might not be clothing. You might get rocks glasses. You might get a beanie. You know, whoever. Who knows? The choices are fairly well unlimited. But it helps me. You know, I'm not making a lot of money on these. It's more about my advertising is getting out.
Yeah.
Nobody advertises for you better than your customers or your guests.
Yeah. Yeah, great point in the cigar industry. The word of mouth is huge. It's a very personal and small world.
It is.
It's a shockingly small world.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in a humidor working with a customer and another customer's there. I've given the guy 10 recommendations and he still hasn't picked any yet. And the other customer says, here, buy this. And the guy grabs a handful. Customers' ratings are platinum.
And that brings up another important, I think, business point, which is, you know, one of the reasons you're able to leverage other people is you're a good dude. And it's challenging coaching, because I do this, you know, like personal performance coaching for leaders. If you're a dick, you're swimming upstream the whole time. And just being a decent sort of human is a great place to start if you want to be successful in anything. And if you're starting a business like a cigar shop lounge based on hospitality and how people feel, you better get your fucking emotional intelligence in line and get your shit together, because that's where it's at.
I like to think, boil down, that topic has been on my brain for many, many years. The one thing I can't teach is being pleasant. I can teach you every other skill related to working here. I have tried and failed thousands of times to teach people how to be pleasant. You have it or you don't. Anything else I can teach you, but you got to start there. You want them to be warm, smiley, welcoming, personable attitude. And people have it or they don't.
Well, it's a great point, because we all have core competencies, right? Things that we're good at. And for every business leader, you know, whether it's a cigar lounge or not, there are certain things about personality and attitude that you could try to coach, you could try to teach, you could try to improve, but it takes so much time and effort that it's just not worth it, because it's not a core competency. For example, I have a glass factory. I can teach somebody how to run a certain machine. I can teach them the flow, how a job shop works, stuff like that. What I can't teach them is how to have a good attitude, how to have a good work ethic, how to come in and own their life and be proud of the work they do instead of punching a clock and waiting for the day to run out because they want a paycheck so that they can go do something else. as opposed to taking pride in their work. And I woke up on purpose to, I can't teach that. Now, I can, because I'm teaching my kids that. But I have 18 years with my kids. I don't have 18 years, you know, with the latest guy I hired. So it's another business lesson for everybody, but especially in a cigar shop and lounge, is know your core competencies, what you can and can't teach, and fail quickly if you got the wrong person.
And by and large, it's like any small business in America. You should plan to fail, because you're going to. Get up, keep going.
And the ratio is higher as well with help, right? So you're here most of the time.
I am. If you're going to do this, this is your new life.
It's a full-time.
I'm here 60 to 80 hours a week.
Yeah.
You got that much in you?
Yeah.
I don't get paid anymore.
And if you get help, all of a sudden, forget about the hours, split, that's half the staff. So if you have the wrong partner there, it's huge, right? I've got, what are we at, 40, 45 folks?
Yeah, right around there.
I've got about, call it 50. 50 folks in my factory. So if I have a bad egg, that's 2%. I can live with that for a little bit. If you have a bad egg, that's 50%.
Correct.
That's challenging.
Very. It's part of why I am, you know, I know a lot of great guys. A lot of them have worked in cigars industry, have been in cigars, you know, a lot longer than I have. And there's, and I mean, literally hundreds of guys that want to work here. There's two I would hire.
Yep.
If I was ready to hire.
I'm not one of them. I think I could be good at it, but that's not why I come to a cigar lounge. I come here to not work, to talk a little bullshit, to relax, to enjoy life, because one of our philosophies at work is work hard, play hard. And we're on the clock, you know, for 8.5 hours for a shift. So for us, as salary, it's like 10 hours. And it's balls to the wall. I mean, today went by in a blink of an eye.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a blink of an eye. Like, I worked through first break and most of lunch. Well, I had to go to my dentist appointment. But other than that, and I hadn't even started my day up, you know?
Yeah. It's the days when you have a long list. But the first thing is, that list is out the freaking window. I got 33 fires that I didn't see coming. Yeah. Now I got to put them out.
But then afterwards, let's go to Tom's.
Yeah.
Right? We'll just spend 45 minutes, burn a quick one, have a sip of whiskey or something, and remember why we worked. Mm-hmm. Right? So that we can do stuff like this. Send our kids to school. You know, eat food. That's what Cigar Lounge is for me, and I don't want to wreck it. And I think that there's a point there, right, for some of the folks that, you know, have this dream. It's like, is it really your dream, or is your dream to walk around a cigar lounge with a cigar in your hand saying hi to folks, mm-hmm. and, you know, stroking your ego a little bit and playing the big man? Well, you don't have to fucking go into business to do that. Just go to your local cigar lounge and walk around and shake people's hands and play the big man.
Yeah. Go to your local cigar lounge, buy a box of cigars, start handing them out. Yeah. I'll let you be the big man.
Right. Tom will have no objection to that whatsoever. Right.
I would say it is a... one of the things I enjoy about working in industry is that my customers, on average, walk in happy and leave happier. And that makes me feel good. I know I've done my job. When they walk in smiling and leave with a bigger smile, mission accomplished. And a lot of non-monetary satisfaction in that. Does show up monetary-wise, because that means they'll be back.
But I think there's some alignment there with my personal culture. And you know, we're lucky to be part of a business that shares our personal values. But the owners will preach all of the time, do the right thing, treat people right, golden rule, all that. The money will follow. You don't chase the money. You chase the culture, and the money follows. And it's worked, because we haven't had a sales target in 10 years as a business. And this is, what, the sixth year in a row we're in the Fast 50, 50 fastest growing companies in our city or whatever. You know, the money just keeps coming in because we don't care. That's the outcome of treating people right. And it's... we were just talking about how embarrassing it is. This is America, and the trouble we have with big corporations like Home Depot and Lowe's and Amazon, where good luck getting any service or anybody that gives a shit. And all you have to do to compete nowadays is have some decent values towards people and treat yep. people right. Keep your promises, you know, treat people
do
the way you
say you're
going to
do.
Yeah, that's all you have to do to be competitive.
And don't make your customers ring themselves up.
Yeah, yeah. No, no comment. Approach, you know, it's making the world a better place, right? And not to get too, you know, activist-y or whatever, but if you're going to run a business, you should be a gentleman or gentlewoman about it, gentleman or lady, which is, you know, the basic definition is somebody who, when people interact with you, they walk away feeling better about themselves. That's it, right?
Absolutely.
I've got a little series of books that my grandmother got me when she was still alive. And it's like how gentlemen speak, how gentlemen dress, you know, stuff like that. It was like a three-book series, you know, while I was in college. And, man, I wasn't a gentleman. I was a fucking wildcat. But that was the point they kept making, was you brush your teeth because you want people to feel better about themselves after hanging out with you, not saying, geez, that guy needs to brush his teeth. You know, grooming and how you dress and stuff like that. It's not about you, actually. It's about everyone around you. And if we all did that, whether it's with our personal businesses or just in our personal lives, how much better would the entire community be?
Absolutely. I also do that. I audiobooks, read books about good customer service.
Mm-hmm.
It is work.
Yeah.
it kind of becomes automatic after you've done it a while, but it is it's a lot of work because, you know,
yeah, it's intentional.
You do get customers that walk in the door that they're hard to please.
Yeah.
And, you know, that 30 years ago, all right, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Get out. That's the wrong answer.
Well, sometimes you kind of have to say that, though.
Well, you know, it's only been, I've only had to do that twice in the last 10 years. One
there
of
are times.
An employee.
Yeah, you have to guard the culture.
Yes.
Right? And sometimes when you have a hospitality industry, you'll have customers that are killing the culture and you have to part ways and fire the customer. You know, that's a hard thing to do. They talk about it in business school. And, you know, unfortunately, you end up with, you know, the borderline sociopaths that all end up working for McKinsey or something. They're like, fire all your customers,
yeah.
You ignorant fucks. You know, yeah, that's not the point. The point is the culture, right? If you have a great culture, you can't let a customer ruin it. You ever hear the other half of popular sayings and proverbs? Well, most of our proverbs, there's two parts. And we say one half or the other, depending on what's appropriate.
Yeah, what suits us.
There's a very famous one in Proverbs from King Solomon, and he wrote, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll think he's wise." And then the very next sentence is, "Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll think he's wise." Right? And the point is, some situations call for ignoring a fool, and some situations call for telling a fool off,
mm-hmm.
right? You have to know. So another example of that is the customer is always right, except that's not the whole quote. The whole quote is the customer is always right in matters of taste, but
yes.
not in everything else, not in how you run your business, right? And so there's times when, you know, customer wants to buy a blondie. Guess what? They're right in matters of taste. It's their taste. They want a blondie.
Sell them all day long.
You mentioned this earlier. You have to stock cigars that sell.
I sell the Groovy Blue despite the ball busting. I will always give it.
But you get somebody in your lounge. They're shabby. They're scratching their crotch. They're, you know, talking filthy. They're ruining the culture. I'm sorry. You don't have a spot here. And like you said, that's a super rare occurrence. But I think it's worth bringing
up. Jenny and I will ask them to correct their behavior first, because, you know, that you do get the kind of the poison pill customer that, you know, politics, religion.
Right, right.
They're busting your balls about your groovy blue.
Right.
Whatever, but they won't get off of it. And you have to say, you know, this is a place of peace and harmony. We all will agree to disagree is the worst it ever gets. And shut the fuck up.
Okay, I gave you a shot. Now it's time to walk to the curb.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and take a break? We are enjoying three Lanceros at the Lancero capital of the Eastern Seaboard, tobacco on Main Street. I've got the original My Father, number 4 Lancero. This is, what, 2016?
Yes.
Delicious aged cigar. Angel?
The Diesel Disciple.
Out of print, but available here.
By the way, there's 2 Disciples.
Until they're gone.
And the Punch Chop Suey. Fantastic. Love it now that I'm into the rapper land.
Isn't the Chop Suey also out of print, isn't it?
It is, mm-hmm. It is. It's part of their Asian food theme series that they've done, even though they've gotten off of food. That's what they stuck with originally, but I think this year's was Bottle Rockets.
Yeah, the Bottle Rocket. Fun. They had the bento box the year before. Yeah.
Chinese New Year.
Yep. All right, let's go to break. We'll be right back. Cigar smoker, and we have the privilege of sitting down with Tom Cannon of Tobacco on Main Street talking about your dream of starting this cigar shop and why you probably fucking shouldn't. Great conversation so far with a great guy, and Tom, I was hoping that we could spend a little bit of time talking about the dream of Tobacco on Main Street, how it came to fruition, and all of that.
Well, it has been a long-held dream of mine. You know, it's a funny thing. 11 years ago, I was a very occasional cigar smoker, retired from my previous position. Thought long and hard and said, well, let's do something fun. Started working part-time in the cigar industry. Up and down the corporate ladder with that, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, the notion comes up of, well, hey, maybe I should do this for myself. And I'd already successfully built my own home private lounges. I was involved enough to help build lounges for professionals, the whole bit. looked up and down the East Coast, got closer many times, just, you know, for whatever reason, as business often is doesn't happen, you know, including one spot. We were literally there to sign the paperwork, and an hour before, the numbers changed. Don't be afraid to walk away. If the numbers aren't right, the numbers aren't right. So we had developed a very, I thought, well thought out business plan. We had planned to, you know, if we fail for 2 years at this, our long-term personal goals were not impacted. You know, plans set aside, so on and so forth. And again, stay small till you get the hang of it. Expand as your business grows and the cash flow allows.
So let's camp there for a minute, because you kind of rush through some really important stuff. So number one, you've got over a decade of actually doing this. At all levels. Two, you got to practice by setting up your own lounge at home. And, you know, I've been there, and you have so many folks over, especially Ravens game and stuff like that. You know, it's not public, but you have more traffic through there than most lounges do.
They do. It is certainly, in my opinion, the best cigar lounge this side of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Again, while it looks big, it didn't cost me a lot of money. Mm-hmm. The building was already there. I rounded up 11 of my closest friends and said, hey, let's build a kick-ass cigar lounge in my backyard. And we did.
Right.
I'm largely responsible for the signage on the walls.
Yeah.
With, you know, all the TVs, you know, everything else. Hey, I got this, I got that, you know, da-da-da-da-da. But it is, it's all an important test run, because that place is also very well ventilated. I can have non-smokers, if they sit at the table I tell them to, they're not even going to know there's cigars in there. This is a 32 by 40 with a 16-foot ceiling pole building that the air turns over every 3 minutes.
So simple things like airflow, temperature controls, things like that you got to practice. And then you mentioned having a business plan, right? Running the numbers. You had the foresight to look at your personal financial goals and figure out, how can I pursue this without putting everything on the line, where if it goes south, I'm fucked and my family's fucked, right? So planning ahead, right? Putting yourself into the kind of position where you can minimize your risk. So, you know,
it's kind of back to what I said, a plan to fail.
Right.
You know, if worst case scenario, it's a 2-year experiment and we sucked at it, we're okay.
No, but
that's where you need to start. But then just do better and plan, you know, take the steps you need to succeed. Know what bumps you're going to run into. I was, there was 1,000 bumps in front of me before I actually kicked the doors open. I was aware of 950 of them and had a plan for them. Oh, this is going to happen. All right, deal with it.
Well, what's really cool about that is, That is the same business approach that I use in the options market with stocks, which is, for risk management, the first thing that you do is worst case scenario. If I lost all my money on this trade, can I sleep at night? Right? And you have, you know, math for position sizing and, you know, sector sizing and all this stuff. If you're good, great. Then you're okay to trade. And then you improve from there. Right, and you can fix trades and adjust them as, you know, time goes by and things change. It's the same approach where you started with worst case scenario. If it all goes to shit, am I okay with that? Now, that doesn't mean, that's not an objective statement. It's subjective.
Correct. Right?
Because
really wasn't my goal.
Yeah, different people can tolerate different stuff, right? And so if you're the kind of guy that, you know, if I lose $50, it bothers me, then don't put $50 on the line, right?
Correct.
So there's some subjectivity there, and then you improve from there, right? You're not planning to fail, you're planning to win, but you plan what happens if I fail, and okay, I'm good with that, right? I can make that work. We call that risk management in business lingo. So you have your fundamentals, and that's the budget, how money works, right, all that. You have the technicals. That's what is the market? What is the appetite? Is it a thing right now? You could have a great business plan for, you know, like disco music. Great fundamentals, but the technicals aren't very good because disco music isn't hot right now, right? And then you have, you know, risk management. And you've kind of touched on all of those things. I would recommend for folks that, you know, are trying to go into this, to go ahead and sit down for a Saturday with a notebook with columns in there, fundamentals and technicals and risk management and cash flow. Because if you can't cash flow, then you're going out of business, right? And be intentional about it.
To your point about, you know, getting on what's hot, overall the cigar industry is in a, I don't want to say slump, but it's in a correction mode. The business is down. I see that as an advantage. Oh, if I can make it work now, mm-hmm. when business is not wonderful, oh, when things get to be in good times again, all right.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's, you know, there's two good business lessons there, right? One is buy low, sell high.
That's boils down. That's right. Yeah.
And the other is do your best work in bad times. If you do your best work in bad times, you will fucking kill it, right? If you can make it work in bad times, you're just going to fucking kill it. And we teach that all the time. When, you know, I'm coaching business leaders on how to win, if instead of being a victim, you go out and fucking crush it when times are bad, oh man, it's only uphill. It can only get better from there. So two great points there. All right, so you had this dream. You had intentionality. You ran numbers. You did all the smart stuff. You also had a lot of experience and practice. And then...
So, location. Very tough. Look long and hard. You find a spot that suits you, and as soon as you mention cigars, 99% of landlords will be like, nope, I'm out. there's no denying cigars come with a certain aroma that is going to impact the space and the building you're in.
How about insurance for the business owner?
Still not awful. You know, despite, you know, having so much fires in Maryland anyway, cigar stores have an exemption about needing fire sprinklers. Because it would ruin the product, you know, instantly.
Yeah.
You know, all right, well, all right, your insurance. Yes. Now I need, you know, empty millions because the fire sprinklers went off for 2 minutes.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. It does bring up a good point. Know about your insurance. Maryland is not the easiest state to do business in. I think that is fairly widely known. You also need to check with what your local county ordinances are, your local city or your municipality ordinances, all of it. There is much more there than you think. And just because you say, oh, this is simple, I came here, this used to be a lawyer's office, I put in one half wall with the door. There's a change. Set off a domino of paperwork that is still not 100% resolved, even though I've been open for 9 months.
And fair to say that there's nobody lining up to tell you this stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. You go to ask the question, you better learn to ask the right questions. Getting my tobacco license. That was a 3-week search on the state of Maryland's website trying to find my Maryland State tobacco license. And finally, I get a hold of a department that sounds like it might know something about it. Talk to a real live person. Oh, no, that's handled at your local county level. Just go to the courthouse. Yeah, so you absolutely need to do your homework and asking the right questions. Yeah, back to the how I got my tobacco license is once I found out that it was available at the county courthouse, exactly 20 minutes later, I had my tobacco license in hand, showed up with a check, filled out the paperwork, there it was.
Right. Right, and, you want to do something, like you said, put in a demising wall or something like that. All of a sudden, it's an avalanche of, you need to talk to this person, but you need to talk to that person. But it's so there, you know, and it's not unique to Maryland, because I've had LLCs in two different states and, you know, worked with businesses all over. Most jurisdictions, there is no portal that says, here's the exact steps you follow. And it's very common for businesses to be rectifying stuff after the fact.
Absolutely. I opened 9 months ago, and I still don't have 100% my... I'm still functioning on my temporary UNO.
Right, right. So that would be the... what would you call it? Like the administrative side. Hey, it is a business. You have a relationship with the local, state, and federal government. You have to have all those ducks in a row. That's work as well.
Trademarking. I started trademarking the business name 13 months ago. I have another 6 to 9 months to go, and all I've done is say yes, and here's another pile of money.
Right. Yeah.
Several times throughout the process. Yeah.
The real reason the trademark office exists.
Yes, right.
All right, and so you got your ducks in a row, you laid the foundation, and then you opened the doors.
Correct. Part of that is, you know, advertising budget is one of the easiest things to whack because it's very hard to track whether it was a productive use of your money. We have literally spent less than $100 advertising in the last 9 months. It's all word of mouth, whatever free social media we can get. I did spend $5 once on Facebook because it allowed me to. After, you know, I don't know, 15 weeks of trying and saying, no, you can't do that, we don't like tobacco.
Right, right.
I finally worded it correctly that it got through, and it worked, sort of. I got 100 calls or messages from all over the country, and I'm like, damn, I would have liked that if they were at least within 50 miles of me. But it worked. the Platinum Forum. Treat your guests well. They will spread the word. Ask them to do that. Ask them to give you the Google, the Yelp, whatever reviews, because that is how you improve your algorithms.
Yeah, and I smoke with folks here in this lounge that also travel, I don't know, up to an hour, maybe, to go to different lounges. It is a small community. So that's a feature, not a bug, right? Where if you're in this industry, you treat people right, and word of mouth takes care of the rest.
As an owner, I have a couple of times made efforts to get away from here on a specific night to go to another guy's shop. Because he was doing a fun thing, and I wanted to support it and see it succeed. Mm-hmm. You know, you see people you haven't seen in a while. You always learn something new. It's always fun to watch other people's operations. You pick up something to do or not to do.
Yeah, I worked at a shop from a previous owner. You know, he had people traveling thousands of miles just to come to this shop, and it so happens to be a tourist attraction on top of it.
Yep. Yeah, over there in Gettysburg. That was a great...
Great location. Thought about that location long and hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's still viable if somebody wanted to throw down in there with a cigar lounge.
Well, the location is great. The city council is not. I'm not sure why they curry favor with, like, big corporations and, you know, franchises. And shit on Main Street. I don't understand.
Yeah, put your franchises out on the edge of it, next to the highway, and then the shopping centers. But downtown,
they make it as difficult
locally
as
owned.
Yeah, for the third generation that has the record store in the basement and sleeps upstairs type of thing. You know, even just regulations around parking, and we're shutting down the street, which is access to your shop for this fucking parade and stuff like that.
Parking is a great example. Here in this building, the other tenants in this building technically has 11 parking spaces with it. All the other tenants took up those 11 spaces. I had to find 5 more city parking spaces, not on a city street or in a city parking lot, on paper to say, yes, these are my 5 parking spaces that count towards this building.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure anywhere you go is going to have a freaking rule like that.
Yep. All right, well, that's getting pretty long on time, so I think it is time to wrap up on this special edition of Burnline Podcast. So you want to start a cigar lounge, and hopefully you guys have learned something, and, you know, if this is something that's been burning in your heart for a while or whatever, man, fucking go for it, but go for it intelligently. And Tom, we're so thankful for your time today and talking through it.
I'm happy to talk on the topic. I've had 5 or 6 people come and talk to me on that specific topic since I opened up. So I'm always happy to share what little wisdom I have.
And if you're in Westminster, Maryland, stop by Tobacco on Main Street, which is on Main Street.
Yeah.
And it is the Lancero capital of the Eastern Seaboard. If you want to enjoy Lancero, here's the place to get them, including, I mean, we're smoking 3 cigars that you can't really get on the show today, and you can get them here. So swing on by, grab you one, and enjoy a great cigar experience, and good luck with your dream of opening your own cigar shop. Thank you for joining us on Burnline Podcast. We will see you again next week.